Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Crile, and today I'm joined by Paul Third, Jamie Durrant, and Danny Law. It feels like just yesterday that we last recorded, guys. How are we?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yesterday, I'm on day three here, having helped out the Dundee Courier on Monday.
I presume you were all up nice and early with the thunder and lightning in Aberdeen?
5:30.
What an awakening it was.
Always up nice and early, Ryan.
Okay, so firstly, to you, the listener, thanks for, well, listening to our crisis episode yesterday after news emerged of another two Aberdeen games being postponed, including tonight's visit of Hamilton to Pittodrie. Now we've had time to mull over the latest developments, we'll talk through them. We'll also discuss the Reds' potential Europa League qualifying opponents, Ross County's phenomenal Premiership start, and the Betfred Cup draw, something which affects almost all of our teams. So, yesterday's developments then. Now we know the kind of full extent of them. We've got certainty that the Hamilton game is off tonight for Aberdeen, as well as the trip to Parkhead on Saturday. Next time Aberdeen will be in action is the 20th of August, hopefully, when they play St Johnstone, a game that was also postponed from last weekend. Celtic's game against St Mirren tonight has also been called off due to Bole Bolingoli's baffling secret trip to Spain. In fairness to Aberdeen, who had their own high-profile breach, as we've discussed at length last week. Their game tonight is also off because, obviously, there's a spike in COVID-19 cases going on in the Granite City at the moment. Nevertheless, Nicola Sturgeon yesterday painted a picture of privileged footballers doing what they wanted, despite the rules and regulations, and the game's on a yellow card. Let's not make it a red card and have football suspended again entirely. There have been changes. The football authorities have promised to punish players if we break the rules going forward. They're going to install an immediate player education programme and agreement to take part in promotional activity for the Scottish Government's FACT campaign. First of all, guys, when we're talking about punishments for players who breach the rules going forward, what sort of things do you think we're likely to see, and will it actually stop players breaching the rules, given we're 2 weeks in and we've had so many already?
Can I go first? I'd think another breach and it's tatties for Scottish football, as we would say up here. I don't know if putting punishments in place, to me it seems like we're just shutting the gate after the horse is bolted. I can't see points being forfeited, not when games have already been postponed, because I think the clubs in question would be going, well, hold on, where's our points if you called that games off before? I don't see it happening retrospectively. And look at this weekend's postponement. It's supposed to be Aberdeen going down to Celtic Park. So what do you do in that situation? Is that a score draw? Does Celtic get 3 points because nobody tested positive at their end? Do Aberdeen win because none of their guys actually left the country? That's where we're at here. I think club fines seems to be the only logical one. A suspension by the SFA. Again, what category are you then putting that into? Do you have to test positive to be suspended? Does the punishment have to then go on a sliding scale depending on what the offence is? Were you out for a meal in your own back garden in Spain? Or did it happen in a game situation? Do you get punished for that? And then what about future postponements? How many have to isolate before a game is going to be postponed in the future? 1, 2, 8? I find myself asking more questions if we're going to go down this road rather than really providing you with any answers here, Ryan.
I think for me, I mean, it was obviously mooted that potentially we were going to be looking at a fortnight shutdown of the Scottish game, and I'm glad that it didn't come to that. I think it would have been totally wrong to halt the season on the basis of kind of the stupidity of one player, and I guess on the back of the naivety of the so-called Aberdeen 8 as well. But I'm always quite uncomfortable when politics gets too heavily involved in football matters, but it's obviously understandable why on this occasion. But you've got to worry about Scottish football being placed on a final warning so soon. I think we're only 10, 11 days into the season. We've got a lot of players now walking a tightrope. And while I've got faith in 99% that they will abide by the protocols, it only takes one player really to let everyone down and we're back to the start. I mean, in terms of Bolingoli, though, I mean, I actually think that for what he did, for jeopardising not just his own team, but Kilmarnock, and then Kilmarnock's upcoming opponents, I honestly don't think a 10-match ban, 20-match ban would be too severe. I think that that's something that I mean, we've seen long, lengthy bans for gambling breaches and violent conduct. But I think what he's done is so severe that I think a lengthy ban is almost appropriate. And I do think as well that we should be looking at punishing the individuals and coming down quite hard on the individuals, rather than trying to impose a kind of strict liability on all of the clubs, though I can see why it might end up going down that route.
I think the politics side of things have had to get involved because there's been a lack of kind of infrastructure or kind of leadership from the governing bodies. And you said, I think I said yesterday, like you can tell that Nicola Sturgeon's getting tired of being asked about footballers because she's got an entire country to run as well. And I think this has finally kind of been the penny that's proverbially dropped, that there is kind of need for some kind of like punishment in place from the governing bodies. And I believe that kind of suspending players is kind of the right way to go about it. And I do agree that provided kind of everyone else in the club has kind of tested kind of negative for it, that kind of punishing the club for it would be unjust, because I think Derek McInnes raised this the other day, and I think it's been raised by a few other managers as well. They've only got the players for a finite amount of time during the day. Once they leave the training ground or leave the stadium, that's them out into kind of wider society, and then you're trusting them to kind of adhere to the regulations. And I think we've all kind of seen the kind of the document that dictates what players should be doing away from the game, and it is kind of quite strict, but I think that's a reflection of the fact that they are in a privileged position and that they're getting to return to their kind of place of work when a lot of kind of people in the country have not kind of had the kind of benefit of doing so.
Football authorities made it clear at the start of the season how tight the schedule was going to be. Scottish football is now in a situation where, if you take the game of football itself as the metaphor for this, they've got a yellow card with the first challenge of the game, essentially. How, taking Aberdeen as your case in point, how tight is Aberdeen's schedule now going to be as a result of these postponements? And that's on the basis that there aren't any further postponements down the line. It looks like they're going to be playing twice a week, basically for the rest of the season.
What if they make the Europa League group stages?
Well, that's it. It does look like that. I mean, what I would say is Derek McInnes does have the squad that can cope with this sort of schedule. I mean, if you're looking at the Saturday's game at St Johnstone that was called off, he was looking at going into that without nine, if you include the suspended Andy Considine. But the Dons' Europa League progress is going to dictate how much of an issue lies ahead. I would imagine the same scenario applies to Celtic after their two games were called off. If they both get to the group stages of European football this season, when you then add in the Betfred Cup matches and the international breaks, we're on the verge of a real fixture headache looming. It's not a case of can the clubs cope with the schedule they'll face. Is the schedule there to actually give a break to put in these midweek matches that are now going to need to be played? And that's without another game going off for any reason.
I mean, the SPFL have made it so clear how few free dates there are, especially if teams do well in Europe. But, I mean, if we get more local lockdowns, I mean, we're waiting to get an update today on the Aberdeen situation, or a particularly bad winter with lots of postponements, then it's really difficult to see how you're going to get all of these games played by the time that we want that to happen. And, you know, I mean, one possible solution would be that you could scrap the post-split fixtures in the top flight and just have a 33-game season. But, I mean, in this season, when you've got Celtic and Rangers competing for Celtic going for 10 in a row, Rangers trying to stop that, and all of the other ramifications for all of the other clubs involved, I mean, no one would want that at all to happen. But, I mean, how they get through these games without having teams playing potentially four times a week if we get a few postponements, I mean that's what it's going to come down to ultimately.
I think it's worth mentioning again today, despite the fact we talked about it a little bit yesterday, Jim McAnally, the Peterhead manager, always outspoken, has raised a bit of an issue for part-time teams, given the restrictions that are in place for full-time teams at the moment that have been made clear about the need to maintain the sporting bubble, i.e. you go between training and your house and you don't go out if you can help it at all. Just to make sure that you're not infecting your teammates, coaching staff, the teams you're playing against. When part-time teams are looking at a comeback in October, how can they possibly, with full-time jobs in addition to their football commitments, maintain any sort of bubble around themselves.
They can't.
You'd argue that there's a greater need for testing at the kind of the part-time level because you have got players kind of flitting between different environments, whereas at the senior level, if they are operating in what they've called this biosecure bubble where they're just going straight from training back home again and they're not interacting with anyone, then in theory, should be at less of a risk. Whereas you can't ask part-time players to kind of self-isolate or to kind of operate within that kind of bubble. Unless they're already working from home anyway, then there's an option there. But if you've got guys that are self-employed, that are kind of tradesmen or things like that, they're going to have to be going out places to earn a living. They can't be then expected to say, no, I'm not working for the next few months because the football season's starting again.
In terms of the schedule, the season's currently on for the game restarting at part-time level and things like that, the current second spike that's going on in Aberdeen and the expectation there will be second spikes elsewhere, the problems the Premiership's had in just 2 weeks, are we still optimistic that the rest of the leagues will be returning in mid-October? I just think we might have to wait a bit longer.
No, not in the current circumstances. I think that the plan for October was probably on the basis that by that stage we were going to be looking at very, very low numbers of COVID-19 cases throughout the country, almost in the basis of some countries and places just now where there's virtually no cases and that they're getting to 100 days now without any cases, and that we'd be at that scenario where perhaps all that would have been required was the occasional test and a temperature check, but it would be pretty safe to go out. I think the longer we go on with the cases and the numbers going back up, then the chances of seeing fans back at grounds and the lower leagues kicking off in October, I fear are diminishing. I hope I'm wrong, but it's really difficult to see in the current climate just now how we'll have some of our lower league teams playing the Highland League and such like. But as I say, I really, really hope I'm wrong with that and that we do kind of see a reversing trend with the COVID-19 numbers just now and that we are able to get these games played. I mean, obviously, we've seen how quickly that things can change in a negative basis, but hopefully that can be just the same in a positive way as well, and that come October, the picture that we have just now, which is quite gloomy, can perhaps be slightly more upbeat.
For me, it's like a twofold situation. Like with the localized kind of lockdown that we've got at the minute, that impacts clubs in the surrounding areas, particularly if we're talking kind of Cove or Highland League clubs where players are not going to be able to travel 5 miles outside of Aberdeen. And say, particularly in the Highland League, where you're kind of getting players based in either kind of Inverness or Aberdeen primarily going to their clubs, a localized lockdown in any of those areas would have kind of a disastrous impact on teams not being able to fulfill fixtures. And then you've got to look at whatever happens at the top level in the Premiership is going to have a knock-on effect. If you're going to get players not following guidelines, games being postponed, and potentially kind of football being put on pause as a last resort, that's going to kind of kick back the start dates for the lower leagues as well. And for some clubs, particularly at kind of the lower level, that's going to create extra level of financial uncertainty when they've already kind of been through so much.
Okay, well, let's continue on the basis that the rest of Aberdeen's games will go ahead as scheduled. They're supposed to be in Europa League first qualifying round action at home against either the Faroe Islands Runavik or Barrytown of Wales on August 27th. Guys, I mean, the draw at this stage, Aberdeen should probably, as a seeded team, be beating any team they get. But which of the two teams do you fancy?
I'm going to go for the Faroese team. Just because Barrytown seems too straightforward. but in a word, I would be my answer to, do I expect Aberdeen to go through? They're at home. They'll have seen the preliminary round tie. They'll know all about whichever team it is they're going to be facing. The margin of victory, if it's less than 3, I'll be surprised.
Hibernian beat the Faroese team 6-1 at home and then ended up in a kind of remarkable second leg game that finished 6-4 in the Faroe Islands. But I think either of these two games away from home would have been tricky. But I would think at Pittodrie, it should, fingers crossed, be quite fairly straightforward for the Dons.
You'd obviously, you'd have kind of the Kilmarnock example against Connors Key last year as the kind of the the kind of the scare tactic almost of what could happen when you're kind of drawn against one of these kind of supposed kind of lesser teams. And I mean, I think, was it Barry Town finished fourth in the Welsh Premier League or something like that last year?
Correct.
So you'd suggest they're kind of they're not quite at the same level as Connors Quay would be. And I mean, it would I think it would create a bit of a sense of intrigue if it was to be a Scotland v Wales affair. And kind of strange enough, I think Paul, you spoke to Darren Young about kind of playing in against kind of Barry Town many, many years ago, and it's kind of strange how things have kind of come back around again so many years later.
Oh, absolutely, it is. It was 6,000 filled the ground down in Wales for that second leg, and they were 3-1 down, and it was 3-3 in torrential rain, probably much like we had this morning. But it's funny, I spoke to Duncan Shearer for his column as well, and he made a point, he doesn't think he's ever played in a game where the rain was that heavy. So, I mean, anything can happen, but it's one leg up at Tawdry. Sorry, I don't see Aberdeen slipping up in this one at all.
No, nor do I. I mean, obviously, the big factor for Aberdeen is that they don't have these two games coming up, which would have helped with match sharpness. They're also having to train just now without a sizable contingent of their squad, not part of that. So Aberdeen do go into this tie with a disadvantage, and obviously the fact that we're still under a local lockdown as well as it stands. So there's a few variables in there for Aberdeen to deal with, a few challenges, but you would still think that whatever team Derek McInnes is able to put out, they should be too strong for either of those sides.
Okay. Should be said that there are some big name players in the two teams that Aberdeen could come up against. Runovic, I believe, have the Faroe Islands top league goal scorer of all time, mm-hmm. while Barry Town United, and Barry Town United is their full name, have David Cottrell, who I'm sure you all know. He was out of the game for a couple of years, I believe, but he did go to Euro 2016 with Wales, so these players could make an impact, I'm sure. Next up, we'll discuss Ross County's quite phenomenal start to the season. Okay, so Ross County are due to play Kilmarnock tonight in Dingwall, looking for their third win to continue their 100% record at the start of the Premiership season. At the weekend, they beat Hamilton 1-0 down there. Guys, what are we thinking about County so far? They appear, as we've said, I think last week, to have got a defensive grit now to go with the attacking flair.
I think the start to the season is probably as good as Stuart Kettlewell could have hoped for, two wins and two clean sheets. And I think I'm sure he said it, but I think the clean sheets aspect will please him the most. It's obviously well documented that they had defensive struggles last season. They were able to score goals, but it was kind of at the other end of the pitch where the shortcomings came. And they've had to kind of bed in an entirely new back four at the start of this season. You've got an 18-year-old in Josh Reid, who's played his first two senior games of football. Alex Iacovitti, who's come up from Oldham. Cole Donaldson had only played a few games after arriving from Inverness in the January window. And then obviously Connor Randall, who's another kind of summer arrival. And I would imagine those guys will probably play the first few games to kind of get themselves kind of settled together as a unit, whether it's going to be the first choice going forward. Who knows? But Stewart's obviously kind of picked that kind of to start with, and he's got all his defenders available. So you'd imagine it's where he kind of sees his defence going.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, early momentum this season of all seasons is going to be such a positive thing. It's one of those seasons where you want to have the points in the bag early on rather than to be chasing, because you don't know what could happen the further into the winter that we go. Just wondered if Stephen Ferguson's kind of hoping that they maybe draw a couple of games down the line, because obviously it's all going really well for, I'm sure he's not, but going really well for Stuart Kettlewell at the start. But I mean, it's an excellent start to the season for Ross County. Same with Hibs too. So they'll be two very happy camps as the season goes on.
You mentioned Jamie Iacovitti, a brilliant addition to my fantasy team, as has been Billy Mackay, who we'll get onto in a minute. One concern and worry I perhaps wanted to raise was in the first game against Motherwell up in Dingwall, Cole Donaldson gave away a penalty, pulling the Motherwell striker out of the ground. There was a bit of a dodgy moment against Hamilton where he got wrong side of the Hamilton striker and appeared to put his hand sort of around the neck of the attacker, almost pulling him down. That obviously that could have been a penalty again. Do we worry a little bit about Cole Donaldson? He seems to be a bit handsy.
I think it's it's something that he's probably done throughout his career. And I mean, he did have his kind of drawbacks when he was at Dundee United, and he's kind of had to kind of go away and rebuild himself at Inverness. And maybe these kind of mistakes won't kind of get punished as heavily in the Championship when he was with Kelly Thistle that maybe will be now. I mean, say it was only down to kind of Liam Donnelly's kind of frightening miss from the spot that it wasn't punished against Motherwell. But I think you can put that down to rustiness. I mean, so they've not played for the best part of 5 months, and so he's not played a lot of football this year either. So I think you can probably forgive him for these kind of first couple of games. I think if it becomes a regular habit and he is kind of giving away kind of penalties or free kicks in dangerous areas, then I think it would be something that the county coaching staff would raise with him.
He was very good last season for Cali Thistle, so I'm sure if he kind of replicates that the form that he had before he left Inverness, then I'm sure he'll do a really good job for Ross County this season.
So the forward line, Ross County, they're obviously packed with people that can get on the ball, either create things or score. Billy Mackay, the veteran, scored at the weekend. It was a tremendous finish, wasn't it?
He's someone that's it seems to be kind of quite evergreen in front of goal. He hasn't kind of lost that instinct. He was always someone that was renowned as a kind of a relentlessly hard worker. He was always kind of someone who would run the channels and someone who would find himself in kind of the positions to put the ball in the back of the net. And I think there probably were some people that were questioning if he could still kind of do it at Premiership level. And he finished kind of joint top scorer for the county last season. And I think he's got guys around him with the system the county are playing now, this 4-3-3 with kind of two strikers out wide, that he's got guys that have got a physical presence there as well. So he's maybe not kind of having to kind of put himself up against defenders directly. He's kind of able to be more focused on finding pockets of space and making runs where guys can find him, which is obviously his strength and something he's shown over the years.
A lot's obviously been said as well about Ross Stewart, so we won't touch on him too much. Harry Payton was fawning over him yesterday, which you guys were involved in, but he also looks to be the star for Ross County at the moment. The way he kind of fills that gap between the midfield and the attack, and is able to, it almost seems when the ball drops into that little pocket of space, he's on it straight away and he's sending the ball kind of down the channel to Stewart or Mackay to run onto, and then he's into the box looking for that ball back.
That's what County need. They need a third guy to be pushing up to support the front two or three, because we have seen three playing as well. I think Lee Irwin's been playing up there. He's got options, Stuart Kettlewell. That's the thing. County have always been decent going forward. It's defence, which we've laboured, has been the issue. But they seem to have fixed that part. So the only way is up for them, as far as I can see.
They seem to have a good balance as far as the midfield goes. I mean, if they've got a fit Ian Vigers playing in the middle of the three, he's someone that is very comfortable on the ball and has a great eye for a pass. And so he's not going to be asked, I don't think, to do too much of the kind of the pressing or kind of getting forward side of things. But when he's on the ball, he's composed, he's confident. And in his kind of current leadership role as well as a captain, he will be able to kind of see kind of a greater part of the pitch. Jordan Tilson, I would imagine, is the kind of the sitting midfielder, the guy who will kind of get in amongst the kind of the other midfielders and kind of break up play. And then you've got Harry Payton, who, for want of a better word, he's the legs in the midfield. He will press people. He will kind of run kind of in the channels and make himself an option further forward. And again, they obviously kind of rate him kind of very highly. He's starting over kind of what you'd term as more established Premiership midfielders like Ross Draper, like Michael Garda and Josh Mullen. You've got the new signing Regan Charles Cook, who's kind of come on a couple of times, and he's someone that's obviously earned the trust of the management team since he arrived in Dingwall.
Special mention also to Ross Draper, who is also in my fantasy team. Ross County play Kilmarnock tonight up in Dingwall. What are we predicting from this one? Obviously, Kilmarnock lost their first game at Hibs, but they drew with Celtic at the weekend, so looks like it could be a bit of a challenge for County.
Would it be cheeky to say my prediction is rain? A goalless draw or 1-0 to either side. I don't see a lot of goals in this one somehow, but I have to say three wins from three, if County can get that, would be an incredible start for Stuart Kettlewell and his players. And even at this early stage,
County to stop 10 in a row.
Well, along with Hibs, who knows? The more up there, the merrier. And with Celtic not playing, they could be really opening up a gap at the top. As I'm saying, if they can make it three wins out of three, even at this early stage, couple of weeks into the season, I think the Staggies could be reassessing their aims this year.
I think, I mean, Kilmarnock will go up there with quite a lot of confidence, because that was, I guess, more like a Steve Clark type of performance that they had at the weekend, where they just defensively shut up shop and contained Celtic very well. But, I mean, Ross County will go into this game with loads of confidence as well. And I think the one thing that they've shown is that if they can get a good run this year in terms of injuries and keep players such as Ross Stewart, then there's no reason why they can't have a really good season this term.
Unlike Aberdeen, Ross County go into the first stage of the Betfred Cup. They found out their draw like everyone else in recent days. They're paired with fellow North team Elgin City, Arbroath, Stirling Albion and Montrose. The Staggies will be happy enough with that draw, I'm sure. I imagine they won't be given too much credence to the Betfred Cup in terms of the league. Correct me if I'm wrong, but for Elgin City, it's a pretty tough draw, them in League 2, but a chance for a few scalps against the other part-time teams that are just starting out for the season.
Usually, yes, but I don't see too many upsets this season due to the way the Betfred Cup schedule's been moved forward. It's the clubs in the lower leagues that are going to be undercooked, and I can't see too many scalps at all as I look across these groups.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Stephen Mackay at Brewery the other day, who said they still don't know when the Highland League season's going to resume, but so they will be competing in the Betfred Cup from October the 6th, and said it will be a challenging start for them. So given there will be no kind of preparation time for them, and you're imagining, if unless kind of something dramatic changes in the next couple of weeks, that they're going to struggle for pre-season friendlies as well. So it's an interesting group for them. So given it's got kind of Cove Rangers and Hibs in there as well, I mean, I think it would be a huge boon for them if, say, a game against Hibs either at Easter Road or at Dudgeon Park was on TV. I think that would be massive for them, and it does have the kind of the appeal of a potential TV tie. I don't think they're expecting too much from it in terms of kind of a competitive outcome, but it'll be like an extended pre-season for them where they can actually get some games under the belt. Cove, you might see them able to kind of nick a couple of results. I mean, they ran Dundee close last year, and that was with a kind of a really kind of understrength team. So given there's only now one division separating those two, then that might be one to watch for a potential upset.
I was going to ask you about Cove, actually. Given that Cove, since they've come up to League 2 and the SPFL generally, they've kind of surprised a lot of people with how quickly they've kicked on again. This group they've got, which pits them against a Premiership team, a Championship team, a team in their new division of League 1 in Forfar, does it give them a chance to really show what their level is? Obviously, Dundee in the Championship, they won't have started either. But if they get a result against Hibs, then it really bodes well, surely, for the future of Cove.
Yeah, I think so. I think especially if they come up against any of those bigger teams at home, then that would be to their advantage, obviously, because they've got such a phenomenal record at the Balmoral Stadium. And it would be, you would think that the likes of Hibs might be opting at that stage of the season to perhaps go with some of their fringe players as well, a mixture of first team and fringe players. So I would think that, I mean, I think the game that's really intriguing, if Broder are kind of up to speed at that stage, would be in Cove. Broder, Cove would be a really interesting game for us, but yeah, that whole group's quite possibly the most intriguing one out of the lot.
Before we finish off, speaking about Cove, they've announced their first signing of the summer, Leighton McIntosh, former Peterhead player, who also played for their group mates Dundee, as well as a host of other clubs. He doesn't look to be a striker that'll get in ahead of the likes of Rory McAllister and Mitch Meganson, so do you think he's there to just provide that extra firepower, should it be required?
I think so. I mean, I'm with you, Ryan. I'm not sure where he's going to play. in this Cove team or whose place in the side he would take if he was going to be getting a regular start. But with another, 7 weeks to go until the season starts, it's hard to predict. I mean, maybe there's going to be guys going out. We just don't know. We've got so long until this window closes. It's very hard to make an accurate prediction in the second week of August.
Jamie, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, from speaking to Paul Hartley, I think he sees him as a different option to kind of what he has available. And I think with two strikers he's got is Mitch and Rory. So if something happens to either of them, there's not a kind of a great deal of cover there. So last season he obviously had a kind of a almost like a glut of lone players that would kind of come in and be able to kind of fill in that kind of 10 role or whatever behind the main striker. And someone like Leighton, who's, again, he scored goals at lower league level. I think he would come in and try and compete for a starting spot. But I think I would imagine, given that they're in a relatively advantageous position of having their squad in place from last season, whereas a lot of clubs will have kind of had to overhaul things given the pandemic, I think we might see a similar Cove side start the new season that finished the one before.
Okay, we'll call part two there. In part three, the final part of today's Northern Goal, we'll discuss Cali Thistle's draw for the Betfred Cup, as well as a signing there, and what Peterhead can expect from the League Cup competition. Cali Thistle's group for the Betfred Cup includes Hearts, which is quite humorous, I think, to pit them against each other once more. Raith Rovers are also in their group, which is another interesting one. They're in the Championship also with Cali Thistle nowadays. Cowdenbeath and East Fife complete the group. But guys, how do we think Cali Thistle will be treating this competition? First of all, I think they're going to use it as pre-season, they've said, but obviously now they've got to play Hearts, who are going to be one of their chief rivals for the Championship title. You imagine that game takes on a bit of extra significance.
I disagree with you there, Ryan.
Do you?
I think Robbo takes the cup games very seriously. He always sees that as a good chance for the club. I think they'll Raith Rovers is a big game for Inverness. If they can win that one, then they're well on their way, I think, to going through from the group with Hearts.
I think they've obviously stated that they want to kind of use it as pre-season, and so they can keep the players on furlough as long as possible. So I think there will be an element of that, and I think they would prefer, if possible, that the Hearts game is the last game out of the group, so they maybe get a few games under their belt before they come to play Hearts. If it was kind of first up and they took a kind of a relatively heavy defeat, then it might kind of cast a bit of a shadow over the kind of the rest of the Betfred Cup campaign. And I did go to the, I was at the kind of the last time they played in the Betfred Cup at the start of the 2018-19 season. I think Inverness only needed a point, or they needed to lose by like 3 goals or less to go through, and they got beat 5-0 and went out. So they'd obviously like to avoid a kind of a repeat of something like that. So the only season I think that they progressed out of the group stages was the 2016-17 season under Richie Foran, where they kind of swept all before them, but then got knocked out by Alloa in the kind of round of 16.
I think as well, when the Hearts Cali Thistle game, you would imagine that would be one of the games that if you were picking one for TV, that would be one. But I imagine that the week of that game, the old cliche about laying down a marker and showing a kind of statement of intent ahead of the Championship season would be cropping up quite a lot between the players and management. I think Cali Thistle will be using it as a basis of pre-season, but pre-season type games that will have a real competitive edge to them in games that you'll want to win. I mean, John Robertson won't be wanting to go out of the competition at that stage. So he'll be, well, they'll be using these games to get match fit ahead of the Championship season starting. They'll be wanting to get out of that group. That's a certainty.
Do you think on the balance of things, if you'd offered John Robertson before the draw to have this look at Hearts before the league games get underway, and Hearts to have a look at Cali Thistle, do you think he'd have taken it, or do you think he'd have said, let's wait until the league season gets going?
To be honest, I think if there's anyone that's going to know what Hearts are going to be like, it's going to be John Robertson. the clubs have obviously kind of come up against each other kind of a decent amount in kind of recent times. They obviously played each other in the in the semi-finals of the Scottish Cup last year as well. So there's obviously last season was a bit of a try to choose my words carefully here, a bit of a mess from a Hearts perspective. So there will be a decent chance that there'll be a fairly different side this season, particularly now Robbie Nielsen's back. And I think there's almost been a kind of an acceptance that given Hearts' kind of financial superiority, that they are going to be the kind of the runaway favourites for the league. But if they can land a blow on Hearts early in the kind of the pre-season, competition, if you want to call it that, it might give them a kind of a little bit of a barometer of where they're at.
Finally, then, Peterhead. They've been given a real test, the League One side, with Dundee United and St Johnstone, the group, two Premiership teams. But they should probably be beating Brechin City and Kelly Hearts. Brechin City, obviously, in League Two now, and Kelly Hearts still in the Lowland League, being denied a playoff at the end of last season. They'll at least get to, in playing Kelly, see departed players Paddy Boyle and Scott Hooper again. Do we think Peterhead, similar to Elgin, it's just a case of getting up to speed, trying to take as many scalps as you can, do well against the bigger teams, beat the teams you should be beating, and sort of lay the groundwork for the new league season?
In Peterhead's case, I think so, definitely. I mean, third place, let's be honest, is probably the best that they're going to get, because St Johnstone and Dundee United will both be well and truly up to speed. But Brechin City and Kelty Hearts are two very winnable games for Jim McAnally's side. The key, of course, is who's going to be in Jim McAnally's side, because that's probably the biggest mystery of all as we're counting down the weeks now to the lower league season starting, because we really don't know what Jim's going to have on board there. There's been so many changes.
Yeah, I think this summer, kind of more so than any, he's lost a lot of kind of regular players. So Greg Fleming's gone, Paddy Boyle's gone, Jack Leach is gone. Those guys were obviously key parts of the team that won the kind of the League Two title in 2019 and got Peterhead back up again. Obviously, you've got Scott Hooper as well, who was kind of in and out of the team last season through illness and injury. And there's been a bit of uncertainty about Scott Brown's future as well, given that he was at one stage in talks with Falkirk over a return to full-time football, but that collapsed. So they've now they have got him for the season, and I don't think that can be undervalued because he's such a huge player for them, and probably he's still capable of cutting it at full-time level. So they've signed Isaac Lane and Gary McKenzie to start with. But I think you're probably looking at they probably need another four players, I would think, before Jim McAnally could say he's satisfied with the squad that he's got.
Okay. Well, that, I think, concludes today's episode of Northern Goal, the second one of the week. Hopefully you enjoy this as much as you enjoyed the first one. Please email any questions or comments to northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. As always, thanks, of course, to Jamie, Danny and Paul. Paul especially for a third shift of the week. Well done, Paul.
Hopefully we've got some football to talk about next week.
Yeah, I know. 1 week of games was just too much for us to bear. Well, Aberdeen games, that should be said. If you've liked what you've heard, please like and subscribe to us on your favourite podcast app. And finally, well, enjoy the Ross County game this evening and enjoy the Aberdeen games when they come. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.